shall we play a game?
What is with meat space?
You didn't say the magic word.
The files are in the computer?
We're only using a simple polyphonetically grouped 20 square digit key transpose from booster phonic form with multiple nulls.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your new defense system sucks.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So it's a code breaker. No, it's the code breaker. Welcome to the latest edition of the Cyber Tap. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Matt.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going all right. I'm feeling pretty good about our episode today.
Yeah, this episode is probably going to be one of my favorites that we've done so far. And we've had a lot of great guests, especially this season on the Cyber Tap. But this one is different, right? So we've had great cybersecurity leaders from around the world. You know, we've had our friends from Infosys and Rolls-Royce and various places, and really, really good and super smart people. But this guy, super smart, but a little different flavor.
I'm impressed your ability to constrain yourself. I think you only fanboy squealed maybe two or three times.
Okay, for the record, there was no squealing, but I openly admit that I am a fan of this guest. So, folks, we've got Jim Browning on the episode today. Jim Browning is an internet celebrity. I don't know. Do we call him celebrity? He's got about 2 million followers on YouTube. You can find him at youtube.com/Jim
Browning. He does not call himself a celebrity, but we do.
We found out, very humble guy. And really great motives for the work that he does. He also has 80,000, I think, followers on Twitter. That's at Jim Browning 11 on Twitter. Highly recommend you go check this guy out. His specialty is stopping scams or intervening on various types of scammers. The content is brilliant. The conversation was great fun. Again, I did not squeal, Mike.
You squealed.
No, I'm a fan because Jim has a special set of skills that makes people like him, a nightmare for people like them, right? You'll see what we mean if you're a fan of the Taken movie. But without any more delay, we should get right to the episode. This is the Cyber Tap with Jim Browning. Well, welcome, Jim Browning, to the Cyber Tap podcast. It is absolutely great to have you.
Matt, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate the chance to speak to your audience.
Yeah, before we started the recording, we had a bit of a conversation that led up to this, and I'll admit what I admitted kind of pre-recording, that I'm a big fan of your content, Jim. I found you on YouTube quite a while ago. For all of our listeners that aren't familiar with Jim Browning's work, this is what I'm going to recommend. Stop listening to us right now. Pause it. Please come back. But pause. Go out to youtube.com/Jim Browning, just like it sounds, and give a watch to Jim's videos. So Jim, hard exactly to classify what you do, but you are anti-scamming and you put content on YouTube. You also have quite a lot of followers on Twitter, are quite active there. And that's Jim Browning 11 on Twitter.
I lost out on the Jim Browning bit, but on Twitter,
what's
that? Somebody had already claimed the Jim Browning one, otherwise it would have been an easier one. But yeah, there you go.
You're the 11th Jim Browning.
I am.
That's okay. Michael Johnson is like the 84th Michael Johnson at Purdue alone.
I went to school here, I was 360. So,
so yeah, we're familiar with that. So Jim Browning 11 on Twitter. I would say, again, stop listening to us, pause us, come back to us, check out some of Jim's content on YouTube. It's brilliant. He actively tries to expose and stop scammers, specifically those that use internet tools or those computer virus based or adware based scams. Very, very interesting work that you're doing, Jim. I found you a few months back. I found a 4-part series. I think it's called Spying on the Scammers. Absolutely great content. I consumed it and I lost a little bit of time. If you ever go down that YouTube rabbit hole where you start a video and then you can't stop, middle of the workday, I think I just consumed all 4 of those right after the other and immediately shared it with my team because I thought it was very, very interesting content. And so could you if our listeners refuse to, you know, listen to my direction to go watch it right now or want to listen to this first, could you walk us through a little bit about that particular series, kind of why you chose to create that, how you got into doing this type of content? And then for our listeners, we'd love to know a little bit, whatever you're willing to share, about the technical aspects of what you do.
Yeah, sure. Well, I do the thing that probably a whole lot of your listeners would love to do, which is kind of turn the tables on scammers. And when I say scammers, it's the people who call you up in the middle of the day saying, we're Microsoft, or we're your phone company, your internet company, or indeed your bank, and it's all just a scam to get money out of you. And I say I do the things that people would love to do. I do it in a way that whenever they connect to my computer, I can use their own connection against them and usually end up back at their computers again. So I can see what they're doing to me and to other people. So I guess it's slightly unique that way. But what I do is I publish the results of that onto YouTube. And sometimes I can go a little bit further than you would imagine. So the YouTube videos you were talking about, the spying on the scammers, I happened to find that some of these scammers had CCTV, so closed circuit TV. They were actually filming their own operation live. And I was able to tap into that feed because I could see them watching themselves. And I was able to watch them and listen to them scamming other people, which is pretty remarkable because there's not many organizations that would work that way. And it's certainly very rare to see scammers operating live. So yes, I've been at this for a few years, but only in the most recent years have been able to get really detailed access. And what I particularly like doing is just telling a story about how this works. So I'm sure almost everybody will have had a phone call going, I'm sure that wasn't legitimate, but the normal advice is hang up the phone. So I will take it further and go, well, what happens if you lead these guys on, and can you actually do anything about them?
Yeah, I think that's what made that particular series probably so riveting, was the fact that you were able to tap into the CCTV cam and see them actually working their scams. And even the edit that you did was really good, because you know, you had the CCTV feed with some of the voice capture that you did at the same time, and you could see them working. It's just, it was a lot. It was a fun watch, but also I think an important, you know, aspect of cybersecurity in general, which is what we kind of talk about here on this podcast, is that they use methods that are, you know, predominantly used for positive things. For example, we use TeamViewer internally. I'm not sure I should have admitted that, and we might have made ourselves more vulnerable, but we use TeamViewer for remote support, but we're not running scams. That's one of the tools, AnyDesk and some of these other things. And we know, and it seems like, and maybe you could help us understand a little bit, some of those have some inherent capability in them that allow you immediately remote access back into the source. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, if you use TeamViewer as an example, now TeamViewer is legitimate software, and as you say, a lot of companies use this, but scammers also use it. They abuse the software. And there are capabilities within that bit of software where you can click on a menu item and you can, they call it switch sides with partner. And that just means that you can, even though they might be controlling your computer, if you hit that button, it will allow you to access their computer if they give you permission to do that. So whenever I try to get access to scammers, it's kind of using that, but unbeknown to the scammer. So that's the principle of how it works. They set up the connection, but I use it in a reverse direction. That's kind of the gist of what I do. There is the questionable aspect of, even though they're trying to scam me, they're trying to steal money from me, is it right that I try to get access to their computers without them knowing? Because in theory, that, according to the letter of the law, is illegal. And I've debated this quite a lot. I've spoken to even other people in law enforcement, and strictly according to letter of the law, that is illegal. But I don't think I'm ever going to get a formal complaint. I can't see the scammers wanting to take me to court to say, sorry, you access my computer, you wreck my scamming organization. Because I record everything that I do, and I try to say, look, the reason why I've got this access is this guy was trying to steal money from me, and I was able to use his connection against him. I'm not sure how that stands up. I'm no legal expert, but I just can't see the formal complaint being raised.
So, I mean, that's one of the, you know, specific topics that we were most interested in talking to you about. And I think I tend to agree with your assessment, right? That some of those means definitely, you know, cross some legal bounds. I think that's pretty clear. And, you know, as a university and as a department, CyberTap here at Purdue, you know, when we teach or we talk to our folks, we never support necessarily any kind of gray hat or black hat type, certainly never any black hat type activities. Yeah. And we saw when we were kind of doing our little bit of research, Wikipedia, you have a Wikipedia entry. So I think that's a congratulations.
I'm amazed by that as well. It's just someone has taken the time to write that up, and it staggers me. Honestly, it really does. But yeah,
you've arrived when, right? And so they listed you as a gray hat hacker. And I think most of our listeners will be familiar with that term, but oftentimes gray hat have a bit more nefarious activity in the gray area, meaning they might go out and find a vulnerability or something and almost hold a company at ransom to try to get them to hire them on contract or some. There's those types of activities that happen. So when you're talking about stopping scammers and you're listed as a gray hat hacker, do you think that's appropriate to call you that?
I wouldn't use the term gray hat at all. In fact, always do is whenever I find out anything about the people on the end of the phone making those scam calls, I tell the police about it. I don't hold back on that. There's nothing. I mean, I don't use it. Well, after the event, perhaps I might use some of the material on YouTube to say, look, this is how these scams work. But I'm really diligent about recording what happens and telling the police about it, because you know, it's a lot of these come from overseas, of course, and it's much, much more difficult to get the police to act on that. But nevertheless, gray hat, no, I wouldn't describe myself that way at all. And I would like to think that it would be, I wouldn't even describe myself as a hacker, to be quite honest. You know, all I'm doing is using a bit of computer knowledge to kind of get one over on scammers. It's not really the true definition of hacking. You know, it's not that I'm sitting there trying to get into these computers. Literally, I have to get the scammer to connect to my well set up computer. Otherwise, I'm no better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we kind of touched on the legal implications, right? So by the letter of the law, which you said, there's certainly some concern, but it sounds to me that, you know, you believe ethically, this is the right thing to do. That's why you say you're not a gray hat. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, I do. I strongly believe that, because if I didn't do what I'm doing and I just relied on, you know, random connections or statistics or something from these scammers, I literally wouldn't be able to tell police who they are and where they are. You know, there's no way that you can just sit on your computer and identify someone by their phone number or by a random connection from their computer. You literally have to go to their computer and either take files from it or indeed watch what they do at their side. Right. Without that, there is absolutely no way you can identify who that person is.
Right. So I think for our listeners, I'd share my perspective this way. I am a big fan, as I said in the opening, and I've said it a couple times. I really enjoy your content very much, and I also appreciate what you're doing personally. You know, the legal stuff is I'm glad you're doing it. I don't know that I would do it, right?
And yeah, you were assuming a risk. I'm definitely assuming a risk when I do it. And it's a calculated risk, though. I do think that I'm doing the right thing, even though by the letter of the law they say it's the wrong thing to do. I don't overstep boundaries, and there are boundaries with this, and I wouldn't, for example, put viruses on their computers or something malicious at their end. It is literally, I do enough to find out who it is that's making the phone calls, and indeed, if they have scammed other people, maybe to warn their other victims, but that's it. You know, it's enough that I can go and let the police do their bit of this.
So there was, I was watching one of your videos. I think it was a re-upload, maybe a bit of a re-edit on, I think it was the nick of time you saved a scam, you know, from someone that was being exposed or being exploited. And this was kind of your traditional tech scam scheme where they appear to be, tech support. Then they change some things on. And I got to say, it's pretty, they're pretty sophisticated. They're pretty slick, even though it's not a terribly difficult thing they do from a technology standpoint, but they edited some, the inline code of a web page to appear that they have transferred money out of this gentleman's account and convinced him that he needed to go buy gift cards to get his money back. Right. So go spend a couple $1,000s. They didn't actually have the gentleman's money. I thought this was video was great, but you finally and intervened live with this particular gentleman while he's standing in line at a 7-Eleven preparing to spend thousands of dollars of his hard-earned money on gift cards.
It's sometimes you can, literally I'm able to see and hear sometimes what the scammers are doing. And in that particular case, they had convinced the guy that they had put money into his account. And of course, the way the refund scam works is they'll pretend that they owe you, say, $100, but they'll add accidentally another zero to it and say, we give you $1,000. We're going to need that back. But in fact, what all they've done is move some of this guy's savings into his current account. And that means that he is convinced that there really is money here, because there is. But what he doesn't know is it's his own money. So they will go out and convince him to return this via gift cards. Now, that may sound incredible, but and that people would even fall for that, but I see it every single day. And this particular guy had gone into a 7-Eleven to buy Google Play gift cards. And even the store, normally what happens is there will be an opportunity to phone the guy before he gets to the shop. But the scammers deliberately keep you on the phone for as long as possible, just in case somebody gets a chance to warn you that you're being scammed.
Right.
And I could not have warned the guy any earlier. In fact, what I had to do was accidentally kill the scammer's voice connection, because I happened to be using their PC. I possibly could have done it earlier, but I was thinking there's going to be an opportunity to phone this guy, but there wasn't. And he was literally in line in the shop about to buy the cards. And I just about got the chance to say, stop what you're doing. The whole thing is a scam. Don't buy those cards. But it was literally the nick of time, that one.
Well, that one in particular, it was like watching a movie. It was like you could feel that same almost like for a good suspenseful movie. I'm like, no, stop him, save him. And I knew you were going to, because you said it in the title. Yeah. But the content was ripping. And you could hear the desperation in the guy's voice, because he knew he was scammed, but he just wanted his money back. He thought he needed to do, I just thought it was great.
Yeah, the scammers upped the pressure a bit there, because they've got access to your computer and they can manipulate the web page showing what your bank total is, so showing you how much cash you've got in your accounts. They deliberately made those totals zero. Even though it wasn't zero, they made it look like they had taken money out, and then they were holding him to ransom. If he didn't go and buy the gift cards, they were going to hold all of his money. And they put him in a position that he really did have a choice.
I think Mike has the next kind of...
Well, I actually want to follow up. I saw another example of you on your YouTube channel where I think it was an Amazon Prime scam where you were live listening in on the scammer talking with the victim. So my question is, how much time do you commit to actually, following these scams? If you're listening to a lot of live conversations, it seems like it might, take up most of your day.
I have a day job. I work in the UK, so I do have a proper job. And I recently do this really in the evening time, my time in the evenings. And this year I've had a bit more time because of COVID and everything else. There's just been, you can't go out as much and everything else. Sure. So in a way that's helped me. But no, it tends to be evenings. Normally you find that the people who target the USA the most work kind of overnights, mostly in India. And that's my evening time as well. So obviously States daytime is my evening time. It tends to be a lot of evenings, but as I say, I have family commitments and everything else, like, sure, like everyone.
Do you sleep?
It may look that way, but it tends to be 2 or 3 hours most evenings I would spend at doing this. Okay. So it's still a hobby for me, but yeah, it's kind of might be changing with YouTube.
So Matt and I and others on our team are big movie buffs. So we are constantly quoting and talking, you know, movie scenes or actors and things. So we thought it might be good to kind of lean into that. And, you know, we have a selection of characters, movie characters, and we're going to see if any of these you might identify with or lean towards or feel like you might emulate just a little bit. So would you choose yourself to emulate more like a John Wick, a Liam Neeson from Taken, a Punisher, or Robin Hood? And this could be the Kevin Costner from Prince of Thieves, the Russell Crowe, which I don't even remember what the title of that one was, or the Cary Elwes with Men in Tights.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard a lot of people use Liam Neeson, mainly because I sound a bit like him with the same neck of the woods. And even on one of my videos, I even put him at the start of it because of, you know, the lines from Taken and all the rest of it.
Skills.
Exactly, yeah. So, and I guess I do have a special set of skills. And although I haven't used the lines directly myself, I would probably most identify with that. Maybe not with him. He's a couple of inches taller than me, but I guess the accent's the same. We're almost from the same neck of the woods here in Ireland. And yeah, probably if I had to pick a character, yeah, Liam. And if Liam wants to appear in any of my YouTube videos, he's very welcome.
Shout out, Liam Neeson. I know you're one of our listeners. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I could guarantee you who's not one of our listeners is Liam Neeson.
But for some reason, I might tweet it out and maybe you could have a listen. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you ever, Jim, if you ever decide to do the most famous line from the Taken series where Liam Neeson says, you know, I've got a special set of skills that make people like me a nightmare for people like you. If you work that into one of yours, I might just fall out of my chair. I would.
Yeah, he probably has a special set of copyright lawyers as well. Maybe on his
if you ever, he might appreciate it because, you know, we certainly appreciate your content. But if you ever work that in, I'll commit to, if you give me if something is equivalent of a P.O. box, I don't want, you know, don't necessarily need your real address. I'll send you some Purdue swag, you know, so you can have I'll send you a hat or a shirt or something.
All right. Yeah. That'd be cool. Yeah. That'd be nice.
So you mentioned this is it's more of a hobby than a livelihood. And that was interesting. Are you, without giving too much detail, because I know in what you do, kind of privacy and anonymity is critical. So are you in a tech field? Is that how you develop these tech skills, or have you been developing through the content you create?
Yeah, no. I mean, I've been in a tech field for all of my adult life, and okay, I've been programming since I was a kid. And yeah, my real job, if you like, takes me into computer networks and everything else. So I already had that background knowledge. And I guess that's probably why I started into this, because like everyone else, I get the phone calls and I'm thinking, hey, hang on, I've got enough of a computer background that maybe I could do more than I guess the average person could, and maybe I could try and track some of these guys down. So that's kind of where it started. But yeah, I've got all the background to it. And yeah, skills-wise, I guess, yeah, enough of a background that makes me a little bit more dangerous to the average scammer, I guess.
Do you remember the first scam call you received that kind of led you into this?
It wasn't actually one that I received myself. I remember an uncle of mine talking about, hey, I just got a phone call from Microsoft and they wanted me to download this thing, and it was called ammyy.com. So this is like an older tech, you know, it's a remote access client. And I didn't know even know what it was at that point. So it just, I'm an engineer, and because of that, I have a kind of, not really a professional, but definitely an interest in how these things work. And scams right. themselves fascinate me. So a lot of this is down to, I like to get to the bottom. I like to figure out, take things apart and find out how they tick. So a lot of it is just curiosity. What happens when these guys call you up? Why are they asking you to do this? What is behind all of it all? So that's that's really where it all started, is how does this work? It was just a simple question.
Yeah, I mean, that curiosity is probably what led you into your tech career, right? It's always how does things work, and how do you fix things? How do you make things work? How do you create new things that work? And I think that's probably what, you know, fascinates me. But there's also kind of the human side of it and the psyche side of it, because I also watch Mike and the team here know I've got some weird YouTube viewing habits. I'll watch some weird stuff on YouTube. We don't need to get into that on this one, but I also watch some of the human scam stuff where people are, you know, world travelers that expose the various scams. So, you know, if you go to New Orleans in the States here down in Louisiana and walk down Bourbon Street, it's a party all the time, but you'll constantly have people come up to you and say things like, I'll bet you I could tell you where you got them shoes. And no way, you can't know where I bought my shoes, but they didn't say that. They said where you got them shoes. And the truth of the matter is I got them on my feet, and it's, you know, these silly little things. And then they immediately start shining your shoe and then try to demand you pay them $20 or whatever for a shoe shine. And there's things like that. And I like watching those, the use of language. And you'll see some of that in some of your content too, just the way that the human interaction goes, the false sense of urgency. Mike was talking about that Amazon scam where, you know, I noticed the first few calls that you had listed that didn't work out was because they were contacting some what sounded like elderly folks that don't buy on Amazon and don't have laptops or desktops for them to connect to. But they'll, you know, the one that was getting through is, you know, that sense of urgency they use and the language changes and all that. I find that part of it pretty interesting too.
Yeah, there's a whole load of psychology around it. And although it is a very set script that most of them will use, you're right. The key bit is the psychology. If people who ask lots of questions, they don't like that. They try to keep you on script. And if you go off script a little bit, then they don't really, not really sure what to do. But they do have answers for almost everything. And as you say, a sense of urgency, and, you know, you're not going to get to your bank, or at least if you don't take this action soon, you may lose money. Or, you know, even if you go into your bank, they will coach you in as to what to say. So quite often, instead of gift cards, they will ask you to transfer money to another bank account in Thailand or India or wherever.
Right.
And they will prime their victims to say, this is what you need to go in and say to the bank, because if you don't say this, it'll look like it's some sort of personal transaction, and they'll charge you 20% extra. And you don't want to do that. And if you go in and say, this is a personal transfer and this is to a friend in Thailand, then that kind of deflects the obvious questions that the bank will ask. And they're trained to ask these questions. You know, do you know this person? Why are you sending it there? And they get the victim to rehearse the story so that they don't raise suspicions, you know, so they're well versed in exactly what to say. There's a lot of psychology behind that.
I saw that in one of your videos. Sorry, Mike. I saw that kind of, Jim, in one of your videos where the scammers had convinced the poor woman that she needed to do everything she could to transfer that money to Thailand. And she even, I think, called you back or something and said, hey, this was real. I'm not sure why you're intervening. I'm not sure why you called my bank. And and the poor lady was being scammed. And she was so convinced that she had to do this that she was willing to try to even tell that story, that narrative, to someone that's trying to help her. It's sad and terrible, but that was a pretty good example of what we're talking about.
That particular woman, unfortunately, the reason that I found out about her was the scammers had a file on their computer, which was just a scan of an international bank transfer. And at the time that I called her, she hadn't realized that she had been scammed. In fact, she had sent what she thought was money in her account that had been given to her, and she was just returning it. And in fact, it was her own savings. So until I said, look, can you also have a look at your savings account? Only then did she figure out, that's how I've been scammed. So when I called her, the initial one thing was, look, none of your business. This was legit. There was nothing wrong. But as I say, she was unfortunately well taken in by it.
So when you contact these individuals' banks, you're not an authorized user in their account. How do you get the banks to respond to you?
That's the difficult bit, and some banks are better than others, so I can't immediately kind of say exactly how I found out about this. what I usually say is, look, there's a friend of mine. I think she's being scammed. She's had one of these type of phone calls. Here's some of her details. Could you maybe go and have a look at that and warn her independently? Mm-hmm. But it depends very much on what's happening. Sometimes it's a little bit too late for that. Banks are in general reasonably receptive, but it depends very much who you speak to in the bank. Some of them will not be prepared for a call like mine, as you can imagine.
Sure.
But right. Others will, if I'm able to quote enough detail, like, for example, look, here's the bank account number. Here's the exact total that is in this person's bank account. And they have just made a transaction between their savings and their current account. If you give them detail without asking them to confirm any of that,
right,
they're usually a bit more receptive.
Do you get transferred to like their fraud departments right away? Or
no, not usually. It depends. Oh, yeah. Again, I mean, I do what everybody else does and kind of Google the fraud phone number. And mm-hmm. usually you're through to somebody who then kind of has to make a decision about who they forward the call to. But right. In most cases, they're quite receptive, I've got to say.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
They can never confirm whether they're able to do anything about it to me, of course.
Right. And appropriately so.
Yeah, I'd like to hope that they do genuinely take. I mean, sometimes I just get the name of the money mule, the people that they send the money to, and say, look, I can see this person has set up this bank account and scammers are putting money into it from victims. Could you maybe take that on board? And sometimes they're receptive to that. Other times they'll go, I can't tell you anything about that. Again, I just like to hope that they're doing something with the information.
Yeah. So watching some of this material, you know, kind of the nefarious nature of these individuals kind of gives a little sickening feeling in your stomach and you feel bad for these people. Is there any particular scam that you've come across that kind of stands above the others as being extra evil or nefarious? Or
well, gross? There's one which I haven't published yet, which is a lot of people catch on to the fact that this may not be legitimate because literally the person on the end of the phone that's running the scam doesn't speak very good English, and they're actually hard to make out sometimes, particularly if you're older. Mm-hmm. And what I found recently was the scammers had recruited someone in the UK to, if you like, take over the kind of more difficult part of the scam, which is convincing the victim to go into their bank to make a transfer. And they recruited, it was a woman actually in the UK to do this. And she had, I could hear her rehearsing her story with the scammers, first of all. And eventually, when she phoned up the victims to try and persuade them, the scammers actually turned her webcam on, the person that they were working with, her webcam on, and were giving her little coaching notes as she was going through to make sure that their experience was able to help scam the victim. And this woman had no hesitation in scamming a 95-year-old woman of £35,000, I guess it's nearly $50,000.
Right.
And had no qualms about that at all. And when you're able to see that face-to-face, actually see her face as she was doing that, it is kind of hard to take. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I haven't published the video yet, and I'm hoping at the moment there's even a court case about that one. I've certainly passed on all the findings to the police. But honestly, it's just the lack of compassion always gets to me. There are hundreds of these scam call centers. There are thousands of phone calls being made every day. I can listen in a lot of them. And it's actually horrific to hear old people, if they're not complying with the scammer's instructions, they're insulted. You know, it's hard. It's hard to watch and it's hard to see. And it is kind of nice to be able to turn the tables the odd time.
Yeah. Yeah. When you start calling them by name, I liked that video as well, where you were getting back at the scammers in one, and you were suggesting that they go talk to their peers and their boss. And, you know, you can hear the pause in their voice. I don't know who that is. You know, oh yeah, you know who that is. There is a bit of, I agree though, that kind of the human element of these is the sad, tragic part, but that's why you do the content. Because
Yeah, I mean, it's not just for YouTube views. It is literally,
sure.
It's so that people can recognize scams more than anything, because every year that the tactics change slightly. This year, they're pretending to be Amazon more than anyone else. I'm sure almost all of your listeners will have heard Amazon have found an order for an iPhone and you're meant to call them up, and that's lead into another scam. But even if the tactics change, if you're aware of what the scammers do, if you're aware that someone who's putting pressure on you to do something very quickly, someone who's asking you not to tell anyone about this, they're all hallmarks of a scam. If people can pick that out, then the videos are working. They're doing what they're intended to do.
Right. Well, you know, Jim, one of the reasons we just wanted to have you on, not only that, you know, we're a fan of the content, but awareness is a big part of what we do. We try to bring awareness to kind of general cybersecurity issues. And this is one. We talk about all sorts of scams, not just, you know, that start with phishing and deliver various malware, but those that start vishing, right? Voice phishing scams. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. And awareness is something that we're keen on, because, you know, we want to protect our loved ones. We want to be mindful ourselves. We do testing against ourselves, or, you know, I just recently sent my team the most nasty fish email to try to get them to click on it. We did get some clicks, and we did get some clicks. I'm not telling who yet, but we did get some clicks. But, you know, I leverage some of those same techniques, and that's kind of some of the services that we provide. We try to help people be better and not fall for these tricks. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons we certainly wanted to have you on, because the awareness is so key. And, you know, to that end, you know, one of our questions is, what's the one single best thing that you can do to protect yourself, or we could share? So we're going into the holiday season here in the U.S., right? And the same in many parts of the world. And we're going to maybe have some chance to be around family, pandemic notwithstanding. But if I could tell, you know, my parents or my grandparents or my brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles or family friends that I care about, what's one thing I should tell them about how to avoid these scams or to look out for?
In just two words, be skeptical, I think, is the one that I would kind of home in on. Don't be afraid to ask lots of questions. If it doesn't seem to make sense, keep asking the questions. And what you find is people who ask pertinent questions and are not railroaded into a script, the scammers tend to hang up on those people very quickly. If you ask, well, why would I do this? What is this software I'm downloading? Who are you? How can I phone you back? How can I get in touch with you? Why does your line sound really strange? You know, why are all these phone calls happening in the background? You can hear all of that usually in the calls. And if you ask enough questions, chances are the scammer will give up on you, because you're too inquiring, and you may be getting closer to the truth behind why they're making the phone call. So I'd say that one, first of all. It's easy whenever you're younger and you know a bit about computers and you kind of can pick up on these scam telltales. But if you, I guess, have maybe an older person who's more vulnerable or has maybe even fallen for scams before, there are ways certainly to block phone calls. And you can buy telephones which allow a whitelist of friends and family only and block all the rest of the calls. And if you feel that maybe there's a relative who keeps getting these phone calls and keeps engaging with scammers, maybe that's the nice Christmas gift to get them, is a whitelisted phone call on your telephone.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So our producer Jim, you guys share, well, your alias shares a name with his real first name. You know, he's also, and Jim, I don't want to speak for you, but we've talked about some of your content and some of the specific things, and he's also a fan. But he had noticed something. I think it was someone playing a video game while doing their scams or something. Oh, yeah. He wanted to ask a little bit about that. And then Jim, I'll let you. We're gonna let producer Jim unmute for the rare occasion, because we're gonna give him a chance to get in here too, Jim.
All right, here's my big debut. So in the 4-part series where you were scamming the scammers, I was literally yelling at the screen for you to call out the guy playing Pac-Man. How hard was it for you not to do that while you were watching him on CCTV playing Pac-Man, kind of dismissing your questions. It was so juicy. How did you refrain from doing that?
It was very, very difficult. And I've got to say, what I was able to do, and it was, if you see the videos, I can look, or I was able to look at their CCTV live. If there's one or two people in the room, it's easy to pick out who you're speaking to. Sometimes with half a dozen people there, it's more difficult. This guy, yeah, he was playing Pac-Man. And what I was speaking to him, and I could see him play Pac-Man, of course. And I was getting very close to doing this. In fact, it was a kind of a Google Doodle, I think, was the Pac-Man game.
Okay.
I was so close to saying, stop playing Pac-Man. So close to saying that I thought, but if I did that, then he might just have a look around, look at a CCTV, and I would...
You would have blown your cover.
For more, I would. And that was the problem, but you're right. It was so close. And whenever I said, well, you're in San Jose, aren't you? And he's going, yeah. Name me a restaurant in San Jose. And he said, and I could see him Googling it. I could see it on the CCTV. And then I said, well, you know, I'm sure you're Googling it. And then his fingers literally stopped. And he said, no, I'm not Googling it, sir. No. And I was so ashamed to say, well, can you ask the guy in the striped shirt next to you? That would have been really nice to do. And I was so close to saying it, but honestly, it would have just blown the cover completely. And I think they would have caught on had I been that.
It would have made better YouTube content, but you're right. You need persistence. That's something you talk about in cybersecurity, right? When people gain persistence for good and bad reasons, right? It's critical.
And you can pull up our chat log, but when I chatted to Matt and Mike and Eric, I said, at that moment, I was hoping you went from Liam Neeson to John Wick. Like, I was just waiting for that, like, transition.
And then you start the annihilation, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously something that's silly that we get to see kind of take place. Are there other kind of funny encounters that we maybe haven't seen that you could mention or that come to mind?
Well, I mean, I did at one point, you know the way that you get the phone calls saying, this is your internet service company or we're Microsoft. I have changed the audio, which is played on those robocalls, to say that basically this is a scamming group from India and we're calling you up to try and get access to your bank account. And if you ever get a phone call like this, you can just ignore it. But hey, if you want to press one and waste their time, please do so. You know, so it was reversing their own. And the nicer thing about that was it cost them, albeit small, but it cost them money to make those phone calls.
Right.
So I was watching the counter of their credit ticking down, and they were literally wondering why they weren't getting very many calls. And they were talking to one another using instant messenger going, What's wrong, by, you know, brother? Why aren't we getting all the phone calls? And it was because I'd switched the audio, which it was kind of.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's absolutely hilarious. I would, if I ever get one of those, and then I think, oh my gosh, I just got called by one of Jim Browning's reverses.
I didn't put my name against it. I probably should have done, but I think it might have been. Yeah, it got the message over anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. That's hilarious. That's so funny. So I want to circle kind of, you know, all the way back here as we're thinking about wrapping up the conversation. You know, we've seen the tech support scam. We talked about the refund scam, the various kind of voice-based phishing scams that, you know, they might be your bank account or your credit card company or ISP or whatever they're calling and saying there's an issue. Amazon, I think that Amazon scam you had works the same way. What are some of the other ones that we might not be as familiar with? Are you finding new trends in this area that are new techniques that would help our listeners and all of us be a little bit more aware about some of the things that maybe we haven't seen yet?
I think I counted there's a website called scammer.info, and it contains a lot of information about scammers and scams. And I think the last time I looked at that website about the description of the various types of scams, I think I counted about 35 different types of scam. Mm-hmm. And they're not always computer based. I mean, you've got the old traditional, you've won the lottery and, you know, send us some advance money. A lot of that obviously continues, but there are variants of these scams the whole time. But I guess one of the worst ones is someone emailing you your password. And that is becoming more and more common. And the reason why they're able to email you your password or one of your previous passwords is they found a big data breach somewhere. But they'll use this as a blackmail, and they'll say to you, you know, I know this is your password because we've got access to your webcam, which I guess is possible, but unusual. And I would know that. And they will literally start blackmailing you. I've seen you do certain things on your webcam. If you don't pay so much in Bitcoin, then we're going to release these videos to your friends and relatives. And that's certainly one of the ones that I'm seeing more and more often. And people are genuinely quite scared about it because there's a pertinent bit of information, your password. But if you can recognize that that is just a mass mail as a result of some data breach somewhere, and these things are inevitable, if you know, if you can understand what's behind all of that, at least you can kind of go in with a bit of knowledge. But I do get emails all the time about people who have been scammed, and it tends to be the people who lose the most money tend to be people who are either in romance scams or some sort of investment scams. And those are really difficult to combat because people normally think they're okay about doing research. You know, is this person genuine? Is this truly somebody who actually might be a romantic contact in a foreign land? Or, you know, people research into, say, investment companies, and what they don't figure out is there might be a real investment company, but this other one is misspelled by a few characters or looks very similar, and they're looking at the wrong thing. So it is difficult. You have to do your research, okay? And there's no easy answer to any of those. And no matter how competent you are, how matter, you know, it doesn't matter if you're young or old, anyone can fall for that sort of scam. And the best way to combat it is to be, as I say, really skeptical, ask the right questions.
Right. And I think that's probably the best takeaway that we're going to get is that skepticism. We, you know, when we train people to go into the profession of cybersecurity, we talk about adversarial thinking. We talk about cybersecurity or security in general mindsets, and skepticism is one of those things. You know, don't immediately go in trusting the security or anything like that. And Jim, we've also talked about those large password breaches. I think in January there was a 2 billion record file that was being kind of moved around some of the more nefarious parts of the internet where people were getting access to known credential leaks. So they were, you know, somebody curated and compiled a whole lot of data breaches into one master file, which is terrible. And I think that was led to some of those the Ring camera breaches and things like that, where you saw some pretty scary videos of people communicating with children, which is just sickening, through Ring cameras. And that was, you know, beginning of the year, maybe last year. It's been some time now. But yeah, those things are out there. So I appreciate that one. I've seen some of those myself. And we tell our listeners and people that we train and talk to, you know, if you're not using that password anymore, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. And if you are, you need to go change it. It's part of a breach. The guy down, I think there's the researcher Troy Hunt down in, I think he's Australian.
He is Australian, yeah.
Yeah, he does the, you know, Have I Been Pwned and Password Pwned, and he puts those things out there. He seems like one of the good guys that's really trying to help people know if they've been part of those breaches. But that's one thing that people can do. And if you're not, I think for the most part, our listeners are tech savvy. So when you go working with your family or friends or coworkers or whatever, you can take your skills and check out some of those tools that are out there to help, you know, identify people that might be at risk and, you know, get the awareness out, because that's what's critical here. The more we know, and to Jim, your point, the more we're skeptical about those phone calls, the safer we're going to be. So Jim, I want to just, again, thank you so much for joining the conversation today on the CyberTap, our humble little podcast. I feel like you've raised us up to a new level here. We've got somebody I think is famous on the podcast.
Yeah. All strange to me. I don't regard myself as famous by any means. But yeah, when maybe that'll change in the future, I don't know. My face isn't out there, so I don't know if I'll ever be that famous. So it's a good thing.
So, the reason, Jim, it's funny, the reason we reached out is we were just having a conversation about your content. As I said, I shared it around a while back, and then we were recording podcasts, and the podcast team here was just talking, and I said, oh, remember that guy? That stuff's so cool. I've seen some of his videos again recently. And our producer, Jim, goes, we should have him on the podcast. And I go, yeah, right. And here we are. And so Jim just made his job a lot harder, because I don't know how he tops this for the next one.
Well, let's say anytime you want me on even another podcast or to talk about this subject, it's going to right up my street, and I'd be very happy to do it again.
Yeah, I think we would definitely welcome that, Jim, and we'll look forward to the next conversation. We're going to keep an eye on your content, following you on Twitter, follow you. I subscribe to your YouTube channel. And when we see things that we think our listeners need to see, we'd love to have you back, or even, you know, in maybe some other forums, because we do a lot of, you know, professional speaking in cybersecurity and around the world. And maybe we can, you know, do it safely, but get you to chat with some of our other audiences as well. And we'd welcome that opportunity. But Jim, thanks again. I will say from my personal point of view, not necessarily as a representative of the university or CyberTap, I'm a big fan, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. I'm glad you're taking the risk so that we don't have to. And, you know, keep it up. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thanks.
Cheers.
To all our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it, as always. If you want to reach out to us and have a conversation, we'd welcome that. We love your feedback. Follow us, subscribe, all those things. You can get us at cybertappodcast@purdue.edu. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike. See you guys. Thank you.